Okay, I think it's time to start the session. So I welcome all of you for Wednesday Sutta teaching session. For some of you it is Tuesday, for us it is Wednesday morning. And we are discussing certain suttas which is relevant to our practice, and we are trying to get some insights from these suttas so that we can connect Buddha's teaching with our own practice. And as a result, we are going through Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, where Buddha is explaining various aspects of so-called person and so-called individual, and he is giving entirely different explanations. And this is quite relevant to our practice, and so we are discussing this for several weeks now. And actually, today we have come to the last session of this sutta. So, first of all, if I go through the summary of the sutta, so Venerable Pukkusati gone forth on behalf of aiming Buddha, the even though he is not seen the Buddha in person and only heard Buddha's teaching through his good friend King Bimbisara. And actually, Venerable Pukkusati is far away from Shravasti, and he is actually in Avanti, and now he is coming towards the Shravasti to meet Buddha. In between, he got late and he had to stay at the potter's warehouse. And while he is staying there, Buddha also understood that Venerable Pukkusati is approaching him in order to meet him. But he found that he has a short lifespan, so and he is in a condition to receive the Dhamma. So Buddha also come into the same place and got permission from the potter as well as from Venerable Pukkusati, and now Buddha also went to the same place. Venerable Pukkusati is with some higher samatha concentration, so he is enjoying those and he attained certain samadhi. And Buddha also understood that he is in a higher concentration, samatha concentration, and Buddha also waited while Venerable Pukkusati emerged from that samadhi. And then Buddha asked from Venerable Pukkusati, from on behalf of whom that you have gone forth. Then Venerable Pukkusati mentioned that I have gone forth on behalf of Gautama the Buddha. And then Buddha asked whether you have seen him. If you see him, could you able to recognize him? Then Venerable Pukkusati replied that no, I haven't seen him, and I also don't be able to recognize him. And here the beauty is that Buddha didn't go to introduce him. Rather, he immediately asked, "Is it okay if I preach you some Dhamma? Are you ready to listen?" Then Venerable Pukkusati, "Yes, my friend, it's all right. You can preach me Dhamma." So likewise, he is addressing the Buddha as a friend, avusovada, and then he started to listen. So now Buddha is giving various deep Dhamma, more relevant to Vipassana, more relevant to the insight meditation. And he's telling the first, this so-called person consists of six elements: earth element, fire element, water element, air element, space element, and consciousness element. So these are the six elements that so-called person consists of. And this explanation actually simplify the whole experience. We typically think we are someone, I have this name, I have these titles, I have these designations, this is my wealth, this is my social status, and these are my children, these are my parents, this is my wife, this is my husband, this is my country. So likewise, we have so much preconceived ideas, we are so preoccupied, and this is how we typically think. Really, struggling with the conventional stuff, conceptual stuff. So this is the typical way of thinking. Now onto this, Buddha is telling, even though that we have so much of conceptual ideas, what is really available is nothing but six elements. So this is in a way huge simplification to our whole experience. So if a yogi is able to recognize all these six elements, understand these six elements, that would be a opening of a different domain. And then Buddha goes on to explain that the so-called person is six bases of contact: eye contact with the sights, ear with sounds, nose with smells, tongue with tastes, body with tactile sensations, and the mind with mental objects. So this way also another simplification comes. So this so-called person is nothing but six contacts, six bases of contact. And then Buddha says this so-called person is 18 types of mental exploration. When we see something through our eyes, so we immediately start to look at more details, expecting to be happy. Or else if the sight is bringing up some kind of a sorrow, kind of a unhappiness, still we may be looking in search of various details, signs, marks available there. So still our mind gets sorrow, more and more unhappy, still we are looking. On the other hand, most of the time we are looking at certain things, it neither brings any happiness nor pain, but some sort of a neutral feeling, but still we are searching, still we are sort of exploring that object. So similarly, we can apply the same situation to ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So whenever the respective object comes to the mind, to the respective sense, then we start to explore it more and more, and the ultimate result is we end up with some sort of a happy feeling or painful feeling or neutral feeling. So therefore, the whole experience, Buddha says, can be defined as 18 types of mental exploration. Then Buddha get into the practitioner's approach, where Buddha says this so-called person is established on four foundations. So these four foundations are different from the typical foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. So these four foundations are entirely a different explanation Buddha is giving. Actually, in this Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, the Buddha's approach is fairly unique. Now, Satipatthana Sutta and Anapana Sati Sutta actually have some similarities. But in Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, Buddha has taken an entirely different approach to explain Dhamma. Actually, it is so beautiful and very beautifully explain a Vipassana approach entirely in a different perspective. Now, has four foundations, has four, what you call, resolves, sort of determinations. While being there, one is working or practicing in order to purify one's mind. So the first of all, the first foundation Buddha says is the foundation of wisdom. So Buddha's teaching or the Buddha's way of explanation, we have to understand, we have to listen to it, and later we need to practice according to it so that this wisdom becomes our own wisdom. Previously, actually, it is very much like a borrowed knowledge, but later through our own practice, we need to try our best to make it our own wisdom. Not the Buddha's wisdom, but rather our own wisdom brings up with our own practice. Now, the first foundation is called the foundation of wisdom because it is giving some information about the elements and then the Vedana, the feelings. So therefore, this gives some explanation about so-called person, so-called individual, and this understanding helps us to eliminate so much of delusion. So we typically have that so-called the identification. We think I am, we think he is, she is. So likewise, we have the typical conventional establishment. But here, according to the Buddha's teaching, as we practice, so our whole view is simplified to six elements. So they are in the consciousness element. Buddha explains it with respect to the feeling. Using the consciousness, one function of consciousness is to recognize various feelings, how to differ happy feeling from a painful feeling, how to distinguish happy feeling from a neutral feeling. So this is the skill or the function of consciousness. So with respect to that, Buddha explained the consciousness, and that is using which we can recognize various feelings. And so the Vedananupassana one can practice properly, and as a result, once mindfulness is well developed, clear comprehension well developed, and one can establish well on the mindfulness, so that while being there, one can stand the one can understand or one can experience the all other mental and physical aspects. Say for example, if you are being mindful, you can observe various feelings as someone else's various feelings. It is not your own painful feeling that I am going on suffering, I am suffering, why it happens to me. So this kind of a wrong thinking will be eliminated, and you now look at various feelings as feelings. In other words, we are looking at them objectively. Feeling is a feeling, neutral feeling is a neutral feeling, painful feeling is a painful feeling, happy feeling is a happy feeling. It has its own causes and conditions. So likewise, now we are in a position to disengage from feelings without identifying with them. Now we can look at various feelings objectively. So this is actually showing us a kind of insight for us to how to disengage from feelings. Similarly, how to disengage from bodily phenomena and look at them objectively. And similarly, how to disengage from mental objects, thoughts, and how to look at them objectively. So this establishment is extremely crucial in our practice, because otherwise we constantly identify with them. We get absorbed to them. We get obsessed with them. But if we are able to look at them objectively, so that is one crucial aspect of our insight practice. And then Buddha explains Venerable Pukkusati that now you have to give up the absorptions, or you don't need to attach to them because they have so many drawbacks. Now you have to plunge into the nothingness or the emptiness where there is no grasping, there is no associations at all. So mind has its own freedom. So now Buddha is turning his mind towards the Nibbana, where there are no associations, there are no attachments, no grasping, and fairly spacious. The mind is free from defilements. So Buddha is turning his attention towards that direction. And then after he encounter or he is able to establish himself on the emptiness or the detachment, unassociated state of mind, Buddha says that is the truth. That is the truth that you need to preserve. Everything else, all the conditioned phenomena, are subjected to constant arising and passing away, constant change. They are so impermanent. They are subjected to this complete or constant transitions, and you have no control at all. So therefore, they are not the truth. If you think any of they are true with respect to the current state, in the next moment it may change otherwise. So how are you going to say so this is the truth? Because if it is true, it has to be true forever. But if something is true only for a moment, and in the next moment if it is changing to something else, then you can't say the present one is the truth. So therefore Buddha says the whole condition experience is not the truth. But if one is able to establish oneself on the unconditioned, where there are no grasping, where there are no clinging, there are no attachments, there is no self-view. So that is the proper state that one can say which is true. So therefore, this is not something extremely far from us. So when a Vipassana yogi continues his practice, time to time he may encounter this kind of a state. Suppose you are doing Vedananupassana. So if you are constantly look at various feelings objectively, so slowly your mind is enriched with very fair amount of insights. So that actually helps us to have a proper understanding about feelings, and as a result, mind starts to disengage from various feelings. Now mind doesn't want to recognize with them, now mind doesn't want to identify with them, but now mind develops a certain skill to look at them objectively. Now mind has its the proper understanding. If there is proper understanding available, one definite result is to relinquish. So sometimes we call as yathabhuta jnana dasana. When one has the yathabhuta jnana dasana, seeing things as they truly are, if one has this insight, one definite result of that is to have the nibbida, disenchantment, and then the relinquishment. So then mind become free. So this freedom is something Buddha really appreciate and ask us to preserve it. If you are able to release your mind, free your mind only for a moment, try to preserve it for another moment. And if you are able to free your mind for 1 minute, try to preserve it for 2 minutes. So likewise, Buddha encourages us to enhance this freedom, well, to well establish on this freedom, because this is the true state of mind. And now one is developing that foundation, and then later one has to cultivate this relinquishment, because we have so many identifications, we have so many acquisitions, possessions, using which actually we define ourselves. I am so and so, I have this name, I have this degree, I have this education, I have this house, this is my occupation, this is my country, they are my children, this is my wealth, this is my bank account, this is my driving license. So likewise, we have so many parameters to define a so-called person. So with that, we actually strengthen our self-view, the I. So constant I-making, mind-making happens through our mind because of the delusion. Now when it happens, Buddha asks us to penetrate that wrong view. Buddha asks us to penetrate that deluded view, deluded thought, and to relinquish it. Without identifying with it, just to relinquish it and to again come back to that freedom. So therefore, this foundation of relinquishment is to give up all these acquisitions, possessions, mental identifications, preconceived ideas, deluded ideas, so that again the mind become free. As I mentioned, it is not that we give up all the physical belongings, all our family, and then go to the forest. Rather, when various thoughts are arising in connected with those attachments, in connection with those possessions, belongings, at that very moment we have to recognize it as a deluded thought. At that time we have to recognize it as a kind of a I-making, mind-making. And at that very moment we have to relinquish that thought without encouraging it, without getting deluded by it. So therefore one has to cultivate this kind of a relinquishment so that mind become more and more free. And not only free, then Buddha is taking us to the fourth foundation. Now mind become peaceful. There is nothing to attach, nothing to corrupt the mind, nothing to obsess the mind. So fair amount of freedom, spaciousness, and entanglement is possible. Otherwise we constantly entangle with various thoughts, because we think that they are my thought, this I have to operate, I have to react according to it. So likewise we constantly get deluded. But here, if we are able to relinquish all those acquisitions from our mind, and again try to maintain that peace, Buddha asks us to train our mind to be in that peace. So this is fairly important, because Buddha says that throughout this whole samsara, we are constantly polluted by lust, constantly affected by hatred, constantly affected by delusion. So how about at least in this very moment, can we be free from hate, delusion and lust? So it's a kind of an invitation, kind of an opening, because so many eons our mind is corrupted, polluted by these various defilements. How about this life? Are we going to constantly continue that practice? Are we still going to sort of become a victim of that defilements? Or are we able to at least momentarily free our mind from those defilements? So that's why Buddha is encouraging us to free our mind from various defilements. So then only the mind become peaceful. When mind is free from various defilements, so then mind become peaceful. That peace has to be trained more and more. So the four foundations, therefore, we can summarize here. The first foundation is the foundation of wisdom, that one should not neglect. One has to be diligent in having that knowledge and to practice and to have and to make this knowledge or this wisdom as one's own knowledge, one's own wisdom, kind of a meditative knowledge, kind of insights, so that one has to work hard to have it. Because it is not that you may gain merely by listening to Dhamma, merely by reading a book. You have to have your practical, work. You have to really get involved in the practice. Then only you are able to have its your own knowledge, your own experiential meditative insight. So for this, Buddha says, don't get delayed, don't postpone it. It requires certain amount of effort. So therefore, Buddha encouraged, telling us, don't neglect it. Panyang nappamajjaya, one has to be diligent, vigilant in having that knowledge, having that wisdom. Then Buddha says, establish yourself on the truth, and that has to be preserved. And at the initial level, it may appear like boring, having no much taste, but more and more if one is maintaining that state, maintaining that free state, then you may start to preserve it, and then there's a possibility of understanding the value of it. And the foundation of relinquishment, Buddha says, one has to cultivate, because again and again this eye-making, mind-making happens. And as a result, when such thing happen, you have to be mindful about it, and without getting deluded by it, you have to relinquish it. And then the peace, the freedom from various defilements has to be trained. So therefore, a kind of a yogi's practice, especially the Vipassana yogi's practice, is, we can say, is well defined or well established on these four foundations. The foundation of wisdom, foundation of truth, foundation of relinquishment, and the foundation of peace. So assume that you are already, your mind is already peaceful. There are no defilements. Then you have to preserve it. You have to protect it. And if it is again getting deluded, you have to remove those defilements. You have to relinquish those attachments, possessions, acquisitions. Again, you have to establish yourself on the wisdom. So likewise, these four foundations are interrelated. They're helping each other. And now we get into the last section, where Buddha says, the tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these foundations. When the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him, he is called a sage at peace. Now Buddha is taking us to another angle, how to relinquish conceiving, how to stop various concealments. Now, if we come back to our mind, time to time, we have various thoughts popping up with respect to various possessions, various acquisitions, various titles, various status, various skills, and we are trying to define a self. Say, for example, suppose you are skilled in music. And you suppose you did a fairly good concert, and now once you come back home, so various thoughts with respect to those related to those activities may pops up in your mind again and again. So you say, oh, I did it very nice, oh, it is very beautiful, many people were there, they all admired my skill, they all admired my performance, So always those kind of thoughts, if you look at carefully, has the root. There is an I, there is a person. So this person went there at to this concert and performed well. So this person is a skillful person. This person is a special person. So you are making a person, you are making an individual, you are making an I with the help of these thoughts. So this thinking is I-centered. So these thoughts actually makes an I. So these thoughts gives you some kind of a strength towards as an individual. So more and more self-identification, self-view, I-making, mind-making is strengthened. So here Buddha says, I am is a conceiving. Asmiti manyita metam. Now, actually, this is an extremely subtle aspect of the Dhamma. We need to look at whenever there is even a subtle vitakka, whenever there is even a very short thought, are we able to carefully scrutinize it and see, is there a I involved there? Is there a self-identification involved there? Is this thought tries to make a self? Is this thought contributes in making a person, an individual, an I? Is this thought promotes an I? So this is a consumant. If so, it is a consumant. So Buddha says, even if you think, oh, I am. Suppose you are going in front of the mirror and you can see the image and you see, oh, I am beautiful, or I am ugly, I am old. So this cloth is not so relevant or good for this moment. I don't appear well with this cloth. So likewise, we are making a self-image. So the thought, I am, is coming up. Suppose you are getting a photograph. Immediately you are searching where I am. Suppose it's a group photograph. If it is a group photo, so immediately we are what you are trying to find is where I am. Where did I stand there? Where did I appear there? So you are searching yourself. So all these thoughts actually promotes the notion of I. So Buddha says, even the slightest thought, I am, is a conceivement. Is a conceiving, and I am this is a conceiving. So suppose you have sort of a kind of an idea, so you say, okay, I have this, I have that, I am this, I am that. All these I am this, I am that has the I in as the center. Those thoughts actually pops up while making I in the center. So this is a conceiving. I am this, I am that is a conceiving. Even for a spiritual accomplishment, you can apply this. Suppose you are now giving up all the attachments, you are able to give up all the sensual desires, and you are able to attain certain jhana. A very beautiful, blissful experience. And now you are absorbed in it. So you have now become that concentration sign. Nothing else. The whole world is given up. But you have become that. So I am that. Still I is there. You are not free from self-view. You are not free from self-idea. Still the I am that is there. So Buddha says, I am that, I am this is a conceiving. And then I shall be is a conceiving. So suppose you are thinking about the future and centralizing the I, you are projecting, I shall be, I will be, and I shall not be, I won't be there, I won't be able to attend to that meeting. So likewise, even that kind of thinking has the thought I included. And then when it comes to the rupa world, the material world, So you can say, I have this body, I have that body, I looks beautiful, I looks pretty, I looks bad, I looks ugly. So likewise, so much of various thoughts popping up, identifying either forms, feelings, perceptions, various mental constructs, etc. So therefore, Buddha says, this is a kind of a disease. This is a kind of a tumor. This is a kind of a dart. Manyitam bhikkhu rogo, manyitam gando, manyitam sallam. Now we need to carefully understand, so we can't do it immediately. So you have to have a fairly good understanding about the Dhamma, fairly good established on mindfulness, and fairly clear mind in order to recognize the dart here, in order to recognize the tumor here. Otherwise we seem to think, how can I think without having the I component? So likewise, it is very difficult to logically understand it unless you have well established yourself in vipassana, well established yourself in the insights. So those insights actually helps us to understand the beauty here, the delusion here. And these insights actually Buddha is further reinforcing, and Buddha says this all conceiving is a kind of a disease, is a dart, is a tumor. And if one is able to overcome all these conceivings, then Buddha says he is a sage at peace. So this is nothing but the Arahant. The Arahant, therefore, is a sage at peace because he is entirely free from all these conceiving. Sabba manyitanam tveva bhikkhu samatikkama muni santoti vuchyati. So, all the concealments, all the conceiving, one is able to relinquish, overcome, and then only the mind become extremely free, extremely peaceful. Otherwise, the tides are coming again and again, making a self. But the Arahant is free from all these tides. Therefore, Buddha says, he is at peace. And when there is no person, when there is no I, there is nothing to get born. And when there is nothing to get born, what is to get old? What is to get aged? And when there is nothing to get aged, what is to die? And when there is no death, nothing to be shaken. And therefore, beautifully Buddha encourages here, for there is nothing present in him by which he might be born. And when there is nothing to born, how could he die? How could he age? And when there is no dying, how could he be shaken? And not being shaken, why should be he yearn? So these are very beautiful arguments Buddha is making here to relinquish this eye-making and mind-making and to have an extremely peaceful mind, free from conceiving, free from manyana. So, and now when Buddha is teaching this whole sutta, all this explanation, all these insights to Venerable Pukkusati, now Venerable Pukkusati understand, so this should be the teacher. This is not a typical person, this is not a typical man, but this should be the teacher on whom I have gone forth. This should be the Buddha. Now only he recognized this should be the Buddha. Actually, so far Buddha never introduced him telling that I am the person, I am the Buddha, I am the teacher. Buddha has never introduced him. But rather he taught the Dhamma and allowed Venerable Pukkusati to recognize the Buddha through the Dhamma. So this is a very beautiful aspect of the Buddha's teaching. Never go for any kind of an advertisement. Rather give the truth or give the teaching and allow the practitioner to recognize the Buddha through his own practice, through his own teaching. Because when Buddha's teaching is internalized, if one is trying to live according to it, when one is trying to have one's own wisdom by practicing according to that teaching, then only one would be able to properly, clearly understand who is Buddha. So this is what happens here to Venerable Pukkusati. So with this beautiful teaching and his own wisdom, now Venerable Pukkusati is to recognize Buddha through the teaching. Now he apologizes Buddha, telling, Bhante, I really didn't recognize you. I didn't really understand this is my teacher. So I simply used the term friend, avuso. So please apologize me. Please forgive me. So this request, now Venerable Pukkusati puts to the Buddha. Then Buddha actually apologized him, forgive him. And Buddha says another beautiful statement here, for it is growth in the noble one's discipline when one sees one's own fault, one's own transgression, and again one tries his best to purify oneself, correct oneself according to the Dhamma. And this is a growth, this is a kind of a restraint in Buddha's sasana, in Buddha's dispensation. Buddha hisa bhikkhu ariyassa vinaye yo acchayan acchayato diswa yatha dhammam patikaroti ayating sangvarang apanjati. So you see your own fault as a fault, so you have to be very honest, very humble, and then you go to the teacher and tell, Bhante, I did this mistake, so please forgive me. So this is a kind of a very honest apology. It's a very beautiful aspect of Dhamma. And there Buddha says, if one see one's own fault and tries to correct it, so then the development is possible. Then the advancement is possible in this Dhamma. Other than sort of hiding one's faults, if one is able to reveal one's faults and to get the apology, then actually helps one to correct oneself and to progress in Dhamma. And then once Buddha mentioned that, so Venerable Pukkusati was happy, and now he is asking higher ordination from the Buddha. Now he thinks that he is already a monk, and he now wants to go forth and to get the higher ordination, Upasampada, from the Buddha. And typically, in order to give Upasampada, even today, you have to have certain requisites. Three robes has to be complete. The single robe or the outer robe, what you call the Uttarasanga, and the double robe, that is the Sangati, and the Antaravasaka, the inner robe. So these three robes is a must for a Upasampada bhikkhu. And the ball. So the three robes and the ball are the must or the essential prerequisites in order to get higher ordination. And when Venerable Pukkusati requests higher ordination from the Buddha, then Buddha asks whether are you complete on these requisites. Then Venerable Pukkusati says, no, I am not. So then Buddha says, it is impossible to give higher ordination without these essential requisites. And so once Buddha informed that, Venerable Pukkusati paid respect to Buddha and went out in search of these requisites. But unfortunately, while in search of searching these requisites, he was knocked by a stray cow and he was killed. And this is how Venerable Pukkusati passed away. And later, the monks get to know that Buddha alone approached Venerable Pukkusati and preached Dhamma only just one night. And then Venerable Pukkusati passed away, and now certain monks are wondering what would be his next birth. And so they approach Buddha and they ask, Bhante, you went to this Buddha's house and you preached Dhamma in short to Venerable Pukkusati, and he was killed later, and what was his next birth? And then Buddha reveals, telling that he is very intelligent, he is very wise. He didn't ask so much questions, but he was able to understand my teaching very quickly. And he actually born in pure thoughts as an anagami, as an unreturner. So by relinquishing five fetters, you know, there are 10 fetters. Among those, if one is able to completely uproot the first five fetters, one would be reborn in the pure abodes as an anagami. So with that note, Buddha concludes this sermon, this sutta. And so I also like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon or the sutta teaching today. And with that, actually, we conclude this whole Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So I like now to open the session for questions.
Oh, Panche, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. What a wonderful sutta. So for all of you that may be new to this group, you may ask a question directly by raising your hand, or you may also send it to me via the chat.
Okay, no questions means that everybody understood everything. yes, I think someone has raised hand. You can unmute your mic and put the question.
Mamdi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My question, I have read this Sutta Bhante, and I came into your teaching only today, so I might have missed some things, but we all are striving to reach some of these stages while we walk on this path. And my question is really, can I have some practical day-to-day things we can do to reach this stage of wisdom, truth, and relinquishment in order that we can move forward practically in our daily life.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yes. Actually, when I was delivering this sutta teaching, actually now this is the 9th day actually we were discussing this sutta. Each section when I was explaining, I tried my best to connect it with the practice. So please listen to those previous sermons or the sutta teachings as well. Everything is included to our website. So maybe Jenny will give you the directions where it is uploaded. And I'll give a few kind of a summary here. Basically, suppose when we are telling we consist of six elements. So the first four elements, Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, the earth element, fire element, water element, and the air element. So these, I mean, as you have correctly mentioned, I mean, just having this knowledge, this has, through the listening is not enough. So we need to recognize these, the availability of these elements through our own practice. Say, for example, when you are doing walking meditation, so whenever your foot is felt with roughness, hardness, heaviness, lightness. So this is an indication that the earth element is present. Whenever you encounter heat, cold, this is the indication that the operation of fire element is present. And when there is wind, when there is movement, when there are vibrations, so that is the function of air element. And when it is something watery, something flowing, is present, as an indication the water element is present. So likewise throughout our practice, so these elements come to the front, but immediately we may not be able to recognize them because our mind is distracted. So we need to first develop a fair amount of concentration, and with that concentrated mind we would be able to clearly recognize the operation of or the presence of these elements. And suppose you do sitting meditation. First, suppose you do some anapanasati and establish mindfulness. And afterward, probably you may be able to recognize various sensations throughout your body. Maybe itching sensation, maybe say rubbing sensations, maybe movements, vibrations, heat, cold. So likewise, so many these characteristics may be available in the body. So now we are looking at various characteristics or the element characteristics. So later we will understand It is there is no person here, there is no I here. What is available is a constant, consistent operation of elements. Because constantly what is available is the manifestation of various characteristics. So you will define your whole experience in a different way, understanding that what is available is a manifestation of these characteristics, these elements. And it is common to inside world as well as to the outside world. Internally you understand what is available is nothing but four elements, and externally also what is available is four elements. So this is one aspect. On the other hand, when you do Vedana Anupassana, suppose you are able to establish mindfulness and then you are able to observe various feelings arising in the body, arising in the mind. There also you understand, okay, this is happiness, this is pain, this is neutral feeling. So likewise, again and again, whenever there are feelings available, feelings arising, you are able to recognize these feelings. So as I mentioned even today, so more you observe like this, kind of a detachment arises. So now you stop identification, rather you are looking at these feelings objectively. So when happy feeling arises, you are looking at it objectively, it is a happy feeling. When there is a painful feeling arises, you are not identifying with it, you are not trying to escape from it, rather you recognize it as this is a painful feeling. When there's a neutral feeling, you are not ignoring it, rather you recognize it. Oh, this is a neutral feeling. So likewise, now the ability to recognize them objectively is possible. As a result, kind of a disengagement happen from this object, from this feeling and the observing mind. So this is how the establishment of mindfulness happens, the growth happens. And when enough wisdom is drawn, so your mind automatically relinquish it. Because mind understand this, engage in this experience or the grasping of this experience, grasping of these various feelings is not necessary, and it's a kind of a burden, it's a kind of a suffering, and it is not, it is out of my control. So why should I grasp? Why should I hold it? Why should I try to possess it? So this question comes in the yogi's mind, and as that wisdom matures, and then the mind will simply relinquish, and then mind become free. So that is how these insights are operating practically in our own practice, and then you get established in that relinquishment, in that freedom, that non-attached state of mind, unbound state of mind. So that has to be further cultivated, that has to be protected and further enhanced. So that is how Buddha is approaching in this sutta, how one has to first develop the wisdom as one's own experience, and then how one's mind will be relinquished, all these attachments, graspings, and then how to preserve that released state of mind, and how to train one's mind to be in that peace by relinquishing all defilements, and again to relinquish all acquisitions. So likewise, Buddha is training us or giving us a path to free our mind. And further, at the last stage, that is what we discussed today, and even to refine that relinquishment by understanding how these thoughts are popping up time to time, sort of tempting us to make an identification, creating an I, making an I. So if one is able to even recognize that, even to penetrate that deluded thought, then one would be able to remove those conceiving, remove those manjana. And then Buddha says his mind is utterly peaceful, extremely peaceful. So that is the Arahant's mind. So likewise, Buddha is stage by stage, gradually taking us deeper in the practice in this sutta. So please listen to the previous sessions as well. So actually I tried to connect the sutta teaching with the practice, so you may be able to further get some connection with your own practice.
Thank you, Bhante. That was very good. I do some of that you mentioned. Just one other thing, if I may ask you, is that while we are doing this, while we are doing our meditation and we get into these samadhi levels and then we look at these elements as they come up and the feelings, can we then just try to relate it to nama rupa and to the arising and passing away and cause and effect and the patita samuppada, or is that not, are we not yet ready to go into those things until we develop further?
Yeah, actually the patita samuppada is included here. Say for example, in when we are discussing consciousness element, so Buddha explains it with respect to the function of consciousness. One important function of consciousness is to distinguish among various feelings. The how to distinguish happy feeling, how to distinguish painful feeling. So likewise, clearly recognizing various feelings is one of the important functions of the consciousness. And there Buddha actually give the theory of Patisamuppada. It is nothing but this causes that, basically. The contact causes the feeling. So he beautifully gives a simile, like when there is a rubbing of two sticks, there's a heat generated. So this rubbing, this contact is causing to generate the heat. But if we keep them apart, so that generated heat will be dissipated. So similarly, Buddha says, the contact causes feeling. So the important thing is Paticca-samuppada is not the simple memorization of those 12 links, but the application of that theory, application of that Ariya-jnana, Ariya-nyaya, where the noble theory. So this causes that, the contact causes feeling. So that penetrative knowledge is included here, it is not omitted. So therefore, Paticca-samuppada is included in this teaching. And when one is understanding various feelings, when one understand various mental constructs, if one is able to understand Paticca-samuppada there, the causality, then actually one's touching that aspect as well. Actually the elements are one aspect, and when suppose one is recognizing mental explorations, probably one would be able to understand how various mental feelings are arising, how a happy feeling arise, how a painful feeling arise, how a neutral feeling arise in the mind. Because when the eye go and contact with the sight, when ear go and contact with the sound, so likewise Buddha is giving us a kind of a beautiful relationship to look at this causality. So therefore the Paticca-samuppada is included in this sutta. And to answer your question, I think it is not those teachings are omitted here. Those are also included. And going through elements is one way of looking at vipassana. But this is not the only method. So Vedana Anupassana is also included here. And again, when one is able to establish one's mindfulness with respect to body and the feelings, then the clarity of mind is automatic. The clarity of mind is evident. Because clarity of mind arises when you are relinquishing without identifying. So the thoughts are not going to the level of proliferation and mind become more and more clear, calm, quiet. So the other aspects of Paticca-samuppada, how avijja conditions sankhara, how sankhara conditions consciousness, how consciousness conditions nama-rupa. So all these other links will be able to recognize through one's own practice.
So thank you, Bhante. Now, I get a little worried because sometimes we are told that we have to actually experience these things and not have thoughts, because thought is not vipassana.
Sure, definitely.
Vipassana.
Yeah.
So sometimes we may, I think maybe I'm thinking when I shouldn't be thinking. So that's where I want a little bit of
clarification.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, as you correctly mentioned, thinking is not vipassana. So, but at the beginning, we may have to think a little to understand Buddha's teaching. Now, even when we are teaching, so you have to think a little, you have to mentally sort of analyze. So this is called the Chintamayana. First, we receive the teaching, and that is the learning part, that is the Sutamayana. And then we have to contemplate according to the teaching, that is the Chintamayana. So once we are convinced about the teaching, then we are putting it into the practice. So we are now trying to internalize the teaching. So that is where the practice is involved. Then we have our own understanding. So then if our own understanding properly tallies with the Buddha's teaching, then we can be really happy, because it is not now a kind of an external teaching. Now it is my own understanding. It is my own experiential knowledge. So that is why at the beginning, maybe a little bit of thinking is or contemplative understanding is available, but later the mind is completely calmed down. So the inner chatter, this monologue, is completely calmed down, and now one is experiencing all these aspects of the Dhamma. As I mentioned, say when you are going through the causality, this Patisamuppada, so one's mind is utterly quiet. Mind is not thinking, rather mind observing how this conditionality operates, and how the feelings and all these are rising and passing away. It is not that we are trying to condition the mind, but rather we are very carefully observing with a very quiet mind. And then one is able to have various insights.
Thank you, Bhante. Much merit to you. I have understood that part. Thanks very much,
Yeah,
Bhante.
okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Bhante. There's quite a few questions that I don't believe we have time since the next virtual retreat Q&A is starting in 2 minutes, Bhante. So
So I think, Jennifer, the virtual retreat starts with the observation of Sila. I think this is in Sinhala medium. This Priyanka Molligoda starts it today, and Bhante Dhammajiva was requested to give Sila at 9 a.m. as far as I know, but right now it is 8 a.m. Yes.
I was told by Kamal it was 8 a.m. Priyanka, can you confirm? Priyanka, you're on the line, right? Okay.
Yes, Jennifer, I'm starting at 9 a.m., observing seal at 9 a.m.
So
Oh, great. That means we have more time.
okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So, Bhante, I don't know that we have any quick questions here, but the next question is, Bhante, please explain briefly the 10 fetters.
Ten fetters, actually, we discussed in Sabbasava Sutta. There are five fetters. I mean, say Sakkaya Ditthi, Vichikiccha, Silabbata Paramasa are the three fetters. You might have some familiarity. We are the Sotapanna, the stream winner may be able to eradicate. And then there are another two, Kamaraga, Patiga. So that is what the other two fetters, only at the level of Anagami, non-returner level, one can eradicate. And there are another five. Those are the sometimes called as the upper fetters, upper half, that Ruparaga, Aruparaga, Mana, Uddaccha, Avijja. Ruparaga is the attachment towards various, say, jhana level kind of experience, and Aruparaga is the attachment towards immaterial experiences. Mana is the conceit. Uddaccha is the restlessness in one's mind. Avijja is the ignorance. So those are called the upper fetters, the Uddhambhagiya Sanyojana. So one can eradicate that only by being an Arahant. So Venerable Pukkusati was able to eradicate first five fetters. Those are called the Adho Bhagya, sorry, Oram Bhagya Sanyojana. And by eradicating those five, one would be able to become an Anagami.
Thank you, Bhante. And the next question is from Sarath. Can you unmute yourself and ask your question?
Eva, this is Ravika. I had to use my husband's computer because my computer was giving problems. So Sarath is my husband. So I just asked the question since you asked me. Manthi, I wanted to ask about how we have to be careful when we use conventional truth. So I have this, because this example came up today when respected Vante asked me to write to the organizers of the two-day retreat and thank them and give my feedback. Usually when I contact anyone, I don't tell what my title is or anything. I just sign my name. But I have found that if I contact another temple, trying to make a new satipasala, or I contact somebody to promote satipasala, when I just sign as a volunteer with my name, which is how I have done for the whole of the last year without using my title or anything, that they just kind of ignore it. And most of my emails to America and all, they just don't answer. This time they ask me specifically to do it. I told what, you know, the my position, and I first introduced myself because I was writing to an organization that I didn't know. So how do we avoid this in our day-to-day life when we have to work using a title or a position, because if not, we can't get the work done?
Exactly. So actually, I 100% agree with you. Actually, when I am sending an email, I have to write who I am. I am simply writing, okay, I am Venerable Chandaratana, so and so. So this is necessary, because I mean, we should not confuse the conventional operation or the conventional reality with the ultimate reality. So when we are dealing with others for the communication, we have to use all these titles, all these designations and names, labels, etc. No harm. But only thing is, that is done. Suppose you write an email and you did it properly, you indicated all the titles and everything, and you thanked them, whatever it is, and you completed it. Suppose that job is done. Now suppose while now you are relaxing yourself, suppose there is another thought, a second thought arising in your mind. Oh, I did a beautiful writing. Oh, I did a beautiful appreciation. I put my name there. They have appreciated that. They have returned me a nice reply. So likewise, there's a thought arising in the mind, making a self.
Okay.
So that is where the hitch. I mean, when we did something good, with respect to that good deed or good words or good thought, by attaching to that deed or word or thought, there's another second thought arising, trying to make a self, trying to confirm a self, trying to strengthen a self. So that is where the hook is. That is where we get wrong. So if we are able to continue or complete our task 100% properly and try to our best, there is no problem at all. But later, with respect to that, what we didn't, if there are second thoughts arising and trying to confirm a self, so that is where we have to be careful. That is where we need to properly penetrate those thoughts. I mean, these are not necessary. I have done the job. So they have replied, fine, I did it properly. That's it. So after that, no, there is no not necessity. There is no necessity at all to make a self out of that task. Yeah.
Thank you, that's very clear. That makes it much easier for me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bente. So the next question is, when we recognize I in the acquisition, then do we explore our rupa or sangha or sankhara in that to uproot the acquisition?
Actually, if you are able to look at all those thoughts with respect to rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, so that's also fine. I mean, so that is another sort of refined penetration happens in your sort of practice. Doesn't matter. I mean, whatever the way, what is appealing to you, what is applicable to you, is all right. Now say for example, there are thoughts arising in the mind. So at that thought, if the sanya, the perception or the signs are prominent, probably you can immediately recognize thoughts, perception, sanya, signs, and you can understand, okay, these are simply signs, they are not the real, they are simply perceptions, and you can simply discard them, relinquish it. On the other hand, suppose there are certain element characteristics are there. There are some bodily changes happen, bodily sensations happen. So instead of promoting the deluded thoughts, you can come back to the body and recognize those bodily sensations. And then those thinking patterns are not fed up, they are not strengthened, because your attention is drawn to the body. Say for example, there are lustful thoughts arising in the mind, but as a result, there are certain bodily changes happen. Now you, rather than promoting the lustful thought, you draw your attention to the body and recognize those reactions. And as a result, those reactions may calm down, and as a result, the thoughts also will be faded away. So on the other hand, suppose when there are another, say, greed-related thoughts are arising. Suppose you are thinking about kind of your wealth, your bank account, or whatever it is. So the greed is arising. So rather than going and get trapped in the conventional thinking, if it is possible to understand, though, this is a greed, this is a kind of a possessive thought, so there we are penetrating. So there we are come to the sankhara. Likewise, if you are able to, it is not possible to say that you have to specifically look at the rupa, specifically look at the, sanya, specifically look at the sankhara. Time to time, your mind may pick whatever it is. Among these different aggregates, your mind may recognize whatever it is, whatever prominent. So the prominent one is enough. So there you recognize the various aggregates. And it helps us to look at it objectively and to relinquish.
Dear Bhante, when one feels an unpleasant feeling for a certain length of time and mindfully experiences it as unpleasant feeling, and then experience the same unpleasant feeling as a neutral feeling, is there still myself, self, this is mine? Or have I abandoned myself temporarily at that time? What I mean to ask is, when one is able to contemplate even an unpleasant feeling as feeling, 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 then it changes to a neutral feeling.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's a good question. Now, when you are practically well established in mindfulness, I mean, fair amount of I component is temporarily subsided, because you are completely mindful and you know the object properly. As you have mentioned, there's a painful feeling and you are able to look at it objectively. So this is a new painful feeling. So there is no I component. It is not that why I am suffering, why this happened to me, why poor me, why it is not happening to others, I am the one always suffering. So that is the wrong way of thinking. That is where the conceiving is there, where there is an I available. But on the other hand, when you keep the mind quiet, and if you are able to recognize painful feeling as a painful feeling, that is the right way of understanding. That is the proper mind establishment of mindfulness and the proper Vedana Anupassana. And you have a quiet mind, which is not thinking. Rather, you recognize painful feeling as painful feeling. And as a result, it may start to diminish, the pain may reduce, and it may convert to a neutral feeling. Fine. But suppose, there is no I component involved, you are done properly. But on the other hand, suppose now you going to write the, Kamathan Varta, this report, the report on the meditation. So suppose there is a possibility of I making. So I did it very properly. It happened nicely today. I am the one who did it to the 100%. I can write a beautiful, successful meditation report today. Now there's a possibility of I making. Yeah, back to you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Bhante. Narosha, actually, you will be the last question for today. Radhika, did you want to make the announcement about the
I just want to ask everyone if anyone is interested in helping us out with the English magazine. Respect Bhante has asked us to introduce a Satipasala English magazine, and Shamila and myself from overseas. Shamila is from Australia, and I'm Radhika, and I'm from Canada. And Tarindu is starting the project. So if you are interested in any way, either to give an article, a poem, to submit the ones of the Satipasala children, typesetting, proofreading, editing, anything, please contact us because we are really in need of volunteers. Thank you so much.
Sorry, Jennifer.
One second.
Can't
sorry,
hear.
Did you say 1 second?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Can I ask a question today, Bhante?
Yes.
Do you have time?
Yeah, I have time. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Bhante, as I was talking, sorry, first I have to apologize, Jennifer, and you, for, you know, my internet got disconnected and there were some technical problems today.
Right.
And I didn't know Jennifer was talking.
Fine.
Asking a question and I was reconnecting.
Right.
So, apologies for that. You know, my main object, primary object is present moment. And when we do when I do thin slices of time, when I was especially like doing the walking meditation, or even day to day, you know, being mindful of doing something. If I consider the what I'm collecting from the eye, so it becomes just pictures.
Yeah.
Passing
yeah.
by.
Yes.
And when it comes to when I concentrate or focus on the ears at the same time, doing the same thin slices of time, the noises become just noises and it is just meaningless. And also from the other senses, like all the five senses, that happens in the five senses, but I think about those senses and I make all these together and to make this picture meaningful. That's kind of a thought process came to my mind when I was doing these thin slices of time. That is about the sensations that I'm collecting from these five senses plus the Manovinyane, I believe. And also, in another day, it's maybe the same day, and it's the identifications that I'm getting those from those five senses as well as this Manovinyane. And also I felt like, you know what, this is some if when I do these thin slices of time, when I put my foot on, you know, on the earth, am I doing any intentional, like chetana or something to make this foot as a foot? I don't know if this is the chintami jnana or pratyaksha jnana. I need to figure that out, but this is kind of, this is the feeling that I got from these three objects, meaning the Vedana, Sanya, and I think the Sankara. But also I feel like this, the Rupa is the one I'm just seeing. That's kind of, am I mixing up something or
yeah.
this is fine?
Yeah, actually
ahead.
You have mixing up. So basically the whole body and the earth, that comes under the Rupa. It is not Rupa here what we see. What we see
yeah,
also
yeah.
is one part of it. So all the five senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body related to the rupa, and similarly the sight, sounds, smells, touch, taste, that's also comes under the rupa. So the rupa aggregate, that is the rupa khanda, includes everything. And then the other four aggregates are related to the mind, the feelings. So the, we get the happy feeling, neutral feeling, say painful feeling. So that those are various feelings, as feeling tones. So those are related to the mind. And then the perceptions, various signs appear in the mind. So those are also in the mind level. And then the sankhara, various mental formations, that's also related to the mind. And the consciousness, say, when we see something through our eyes, so I and the form, or I and the rupa, the sight are the physical aspect, but due to that contact, there's a knowing arise in the mind. So that's what we call as eye consciousness. So this is how we recognize, this is how we distinguish when there's a sight happens in our eyes. So there's an eye consciousness, there's a kind of a knowing arise. And when there is a sound coincides with the ear, then the ear consciousness happens. So this is how we know that there's a sound. So this knowing part belongs to the mental aspect. So that is where the vijnana khanda, all with respect to and including the mano vijnana as well.
So when we look at these things, it becomes everything is just thoughts.
Thoughts actually are much related to the sankhara, because thoughts. As thoughts, then there has to be a manifestation in the mind. Suppose your mind is completely clean and silent. At that time, there's a possibility of sensations happen in your body. And you know it. So this knowing and a thought is different. You don't need a thought in order to know. Did you get my point?
Yes. Yeah.
Suppose suppose you do walking meditation. So while you are walking, your body is walking. There are various sensations, but the mind could be completely quiet. So there are no thoughts at all in the mind, but the body is walking. You are feeling everything, but the mind is quiet. No thoughts at all. So that is possible.
But is a feeling isn't a thought.
So that's why the Buddha properly sort of categorized these things. So the physical aspects belong to the rupa khanda. So the feelings aspects are belonging to the feeling aggregate, and various mental images, the perceptions, that all belong to the sanya khanda.
Sanya.
Yeah, and then the sankhara has some prominence in the thoughts. So when there is a happy thought, it is not a feeling. It is not merely the perception, but there's a kind of thought arising in the mind. You start to construct. You start to tell to yourself, oh, I feel really good. Oh, it's a beautiful day. There's a really sunny day. So there's a kind of a vitakka, kind of appreciation, kind of appreciative thought, vitakka arising in the mind. So this is where we do a little fabrication. Suppose you had a completely quiet mind, and now you see a sun, and now there's an appreciative thought arising in the mind. Oh, today is a sunny day. It's a beautiful, beautiful environment today. So these are kind of a little mental constructs arising in the mind. So that is where it comes to the sankhara skandha. We don't stop at the sight level. We don't stop at the ditte dittamattang. Rather, we construct on top of that. So then it is a sankhara.
Yeah, if we edit that.
Exactly. We put our five cents to it. We put our likes and dislikes to it. And we start to think about it. We start to comment on it.
Yeah, that's what I asked in the beginning. Like, if I look at only the sight, hearing, and the smell, and those sensations, it becomes just meaningless.
And
if we do
meaningless in the sense your mind can be kept very quiet, and they are merely seen, merely heard. So that's what the Buddha telling to Venerable Bahir. So in the seen, there is merely seen. In the heard, there is merely heard. And what is sensed, there is merely the sensed. And only in the cognized, what just merely the cognized. And there is nothing to construct out of it. There is nothing to fabricate out of it. If you are able to maintain that quietude in the mind without doing any mental constructs, without doing any fabrication, then the mind is in a peace. Mind is at peace. True. Seen is just seen.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yep, yeah.
Much metta to you.
Yeah,
Jennifer, can I do a little thing as well? I would like to second Ms. Radhika's announcement. If you are interested in volunteering to Satipatthana about this English e-magazine, please send her an email. It's a very good contribution to the Satipatthana, and we all appreciate any participation and volunteering. Thank you very much. Much metta to everybody.
Yeah, I think...
thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah. I think, Jennifer, we are now coming to the end of session. Hope we can wind up the session.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very
much.
So
thank you very much for your participation. There are some interesting questions. And so we'll share the merits and wind up the session. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sambha sambatti siddhiya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabbha sampatti siddhiya. එත්තාවතා චම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු
තෙරුවන් සරණයි පන්ති
යා තෙරුවන් සරණයි
And we welcome all to join again next week for a new sutta discourse. And for all of those that is joining for the virtual retreat, please stay on this line and the retreat will get started. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.